And welcome into the Friday edition of Robbie and Rex Road. Today, it is Rex Road and Vingan. And Knezovic, of course, as always. I'm Joe Rex Road, and I'm Vingan in for Robbie today. Michelle running the show. I'm on mic one, which makes everyone nervous here. Adam Vingan, how the heck are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be back in. Unfortunately, Robbie has to be out. And I know everybody's looking forward to hearing Robbie. But I will do my best to fill his big shoes.
Well, today's a day that I would say would be appropriate to complain about the Nashville Predators. So this timing isn't all that bad. Michelle, how the heck are you doing?
I'm doing great this morning, guys. I have Louisville Twitter enraged at me.
Yeah, so you just decided randomly to just say Louisville should hire Chris Beard.
Okay, first off, never said should. No, I didn't say should. People took that tweet. No. I said early prediction. Okay. I could see Beard to Louisville.
Yeah.
It was just a called shot prediction.
A strand thought.
Whoa, I got crucified. Some people were like, oh my gosh, I wish. And then it was wild. Louisville Twitter found me, and they're like, oh, she's a Kentucky fan. I'm like, oh, gosh.
Oh, yeah, the Kentucky grad talking, you know, get Louisville out of your mouth, Michelle. My goodness.
Yeah, that went 0 to 1,000 real quick.
Well, you know, before we get into the Preds, actually, speaking of college hoops and coaches and whatnot, how are you doing with your first year post-K there with your Duke Blue Devils there, Vingan?
It's been an up-and-down year. I'm typically not a blame the refs guy.
Oh, boy.
But the ACC did say they screwed up at the end of the Virginia game.
They did screw them. Yeah, that was bad. That was bad.
And I've already let our friend John Glennon know that they screwed up, and he knows too. He knows deep down inside.
He does. Now, Duke, I think, gets a call or two here or there in their history.
Possibly, I don't know what you're talking
perhaps,
about.
Maybe. So.
Are you happy
with the successor, or like, are you okay? Like, is it going to be maintained? Is the program going to, you know, stay Duke?
The most important thing, at least to me at this particular moment, is that Carolina is down worse than Duke is.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, actually, it's really interesting. To me, there's four blue bloods, like true blue bloods, which is Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas.
I mean, Kentucky's down the worst.
Relax.
Are they? I mean, Carolina's...
they're not great
it's
either.
It's close between those two. But yeah, all three of them. I mean, Kansas is the only one that's kind of maintaining the standard this year. But speaking of college hoops, by the way, we're going to have Casey Alexander on at 6:30 to talk about Belmont, which is having a heck of a year, has a huge game coming up against Drake. Like I said, we also have Jared Stillman at 7. So Jared, a day later, gets to relive his loss to me and Jared versus Joe. And then we'll have TD, as always, Tron Davenport, 8 o'clock, talk NFL and Titans. And if you'd like to get in on this, get in on the phone or text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615. Seriously.
737-1025.
See? Me on microphone one. My gosh. All right. Let's get into what we saw last night. So you, Adam Vingan, speaking of Jared Stillman, you had, as you called it, a man date.
Yes. A man space date.
You chose, man hyphen date.
Yes.
You reached out and said, I'd like to go to the Preds-Bruins game with Jared Stillman, which I think is just fascinating. Is this like a scientific experiment?
You know what's
funny? What was the experiment? Before we get into the game, which is 5-0 Bruins, and we'll talk about a lot, what was the experience like of, you know, just hanging with Jared at a hockey game?
It was like having your own private Jared and, you know, Stillman and company from 2 to 6. The funniest part about it was actually, I think it was during the first intermission, we were walking the concourse because I was going to get something to eat, and someone came up to us randomly and said, I thought you two hated each other. Based on like our interactions with each other on Twitter, and I was like, no, we just like to bust each other's chops. We're friends, but like, it was not unlike listening to the radio from 2 to 6. But it was just for an audience of one. No, I had a good time. I appreciate Jared taking me to the game. I wanted to see the Bruins. I wanted to see a actual hockey team at Bridgestone Arena.
Oh boy.
I think that's what we saw last night. It was ugly. It was ugly.
Yeah. 5-0. You know, you got some mistakes. You've got the dominant team in hockey. And, you know, you've got, to me, UC Saros, I didn't have much of a chance on most of those goals. I mean, he's hung out to dry. A lot of neutral zone turnovers, odd man rushes coming off that for Boston. Bad power play again for the Preds. But, yeah, that last goal, by then it's garbage time, right?
Mm-hmm.
I got to say, I didn't think the effort was spectacular on that play.
No.
The D-zone coverage. But just in terms of, we understand it's a mismatch. That's a game that you aren't surprised to see the Preds lose. The game they can't lose is the one before it. But just body language, energy, intensity, all that. Where did you think that was last night for the Nashville Predators?
I think it was, I thought the first period, the Predators, I thought, did an okay job. The shot counter, I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was lopsided in favor of the Bruins. And that goal that Brad Marchand and Patrice Bergeron combined on was a thing of beauty. The second period is where it really got out of hand. And, that was my first Predators game in attendance this season, which is weird for me to say in mid-February, considering how many games I obviously used to attend. But, watching the team in person, and I understand that the Bruins are a machine. There is a reason why they are on pace to have the best regular season in NHL history in terms of wins and points, I believe. But the discrepancy in talent between the two teams last night was, to use a favorite word of mine, chasmic. Jared likened it to, how if you have a minor league baseball team in town, usually before the season starts, they'll host their major league club to play a game, an exhibition game at the minor league stadium.
Right.
That's what it felt like. The Predators did not belong on the same ice surface as the Boston Bruins. And I don't know how anybody who watches the Predators, whether you're an impartial observer or a partial observer, can watch this team and think of it as anything other than what it is, and that is painfully mediocre at best. They could be slightly worse than mediocre, but I did the math before we came on the air. So they have 30 games left. I think they have 56 points. So that would mean last season they made the playoffs with 97 points. They were they had the fewest points of any team to make the playoffs last season. So yep. in order to get back to 97, they would need 41 points over their final 30 games, which is a 112 point pace over a full 82 game season. In terms of wins, I would say they probably need to win somewhere between 18 and 20 of their final 30 games to make the playoffs. Not happening.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
It would take – I'm trying to think back to 2 years ago. It wasn't quite that desperate, but it required a heck of a run for them to get in, and they made it.
I think they went 27-1 in the second half of the 56 game season to make the playoffs, like 2-0, 7-1, not 27.
Well, that's a great memory on your part. So basically, that's exactly what they need to do again.
And that was a lightning in a bottle type thing. And there is, to me, and I know I am prone to hyperbole, as you know. To me, the next few weeks leading into the March 3rd trade deadline needs to be the beginning of the dismantling of the Nashville Predators. I don't know how David Poile and his front office staff can watch what they watched last night and think this team has, one, any chance of making the playoffs, and two, if they somehow make it in, have any chance of doing anything of significance. Quite frankly, if I'm a member of ownership at that game last night, I mean, it was a significant portion of Bruins fans in that building last night. Like, it was loud for Boston. If I'm ownership and I'm watching my building being overrun by visiting fans and watching my team get its butt kicked, I'm embarrassed. And that, honestly, that's how I would feel if I was a member of ownership right now. And I think that's how David Poile should feel watching this team. It is not a good product at all. Like, it was, you know, I'm not saying this team quit or anything like that, but it was painful to watch last night just how wide the gap is between the best teams in the league and the Nashville Predators.
Well, and the interesting thing about that, of course, is like go look at like preseason predictions. On paper, I would say these teams were regarded actually somewhat similarly going into the year.
Right. The Bruins were down a little bit, and you know, they fired Bruce Cassidy, and you weren't sure what was going to happen with Patrice Bergeron and David Krejci. But
like everything has gone incredibly well. Like best case with so many, and obviously Pastrnak is just ridiculous this year.
And he didn't even score last night.
Yeah.
And you know, this is how I felt about the game. So Jared's seats are on the side where the Predators attack twice. So when the Bruins scored their first goal, it was in the opposite direction. So I think it was Matthias Ekholm had the shot that went wide that rimmed around the boards, and Marchand broke down the left wing boards. And before he even crossed the red line, I knew they were going to score. I saw Bergeron cutting down the center of the ice. I was like, there's no way they're not scoring on this play. And it was a thing of beauty. And we talked about how well this team was playing, the Predators, that is, after leading into the All-Star break. They are 1-3 since returning from the break. They've been outscored 15-5. You know, they were handled quite easily by Vegas. They had to beat the Flyers in overtime by only scoring 2 goals, and they lost to one of the worst teams in the league. So if this stretch is telling you what you need to know about the Nashville Predators, then I don't think you need to see anything else. I mean, this team is bad.
We'll continue the discussion on the Nashville Predators. Lots of thoughts already on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHunter.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road.
I mean, they had the early goal, and then, you know, I thought early in the first period our execution was not close to what it needed to be. I thought we turned pucks over at the offensive blue line. We didn't have ice to play on. I thought our power play was ineffective early. That gives you a chance to be able to have some pushback in the game, and, you know, that was the extent of the first period.
That was John Hines after last night's 5-0 loss to the Nashville Predators to the Boston Bruins, best team in the league. And showed it, and showed that there's a huge gap between the Bruins and the Preds. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road here at the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Adam Vingan in for Robbie Stanley today. So, Adam, okay, we've established it was a bad performance by the Preds. That was a glimpse of here's the best in the league, and here's where you are. So you came away from this more, this is just the state of, you know, these rosters, then the Preds intangibly are in trouble right now. Is that fair to say?
It was both.
Okay.
I mean, I think 2 nights earlier, the Bruins were in Dallas. They won, I believe, 3-2 in overtime. That game, that was a tight game, which shows you that the Stars, who are, I believe, at the top of the Western Conference, are a good team. They played well and held their own against the top team in the league. And then, as I said before, you know, you play a team much further down the standings in Nashville, if you're Boston, and you have your way with them. So it was a mixture of both. It was clearly the Bruins are a wagon, and the Predators are down bad.
Wow, both two like very cool expressions, like cool young hip expressions by you there.
I haven't gotten into that point yet where, like, I mean, I've been a dad for a year and a half now, but I'm still cool.
Right. Yeah.
I'm not making bad dad jokes.
You'll morph into those bad dad jokes soon enough. Don't you worry, my friend.
Yeah.
Will in Kentucky on the text line driven by WillsConnahan.com. Trade everyone. He got this in at 6:01 a.m. Trade everyone you can. Coach, GM, Jim the concessions guy. This team is garbage. crying laughing emoji. Someone asked if you had to take Tylenol pregame to before hanging out with Jared. Are we still in a competitive rebuild or nah? Brandon says, I was hoping to wake up to the headline, Predators fire John Hines. So let's talk about that, because I think you and I have talked a little bit about this, you know, just between ourselves. You know, firing a coach, I can't recall a mid-February firing of a, like mid-season, you see that sometimes. You saw Laviolette in early January, right, 3 years ago. I guess anything's possible. I suppose that the Preds just totally nosedive. I mean, you know, I guess you could keep everything on the table, but I'd be really surprised if there was any in-season move on John Hines. What about you?
Yeah, I would be too. And as you said, it's not just a coaching change this late in the season. It's a coaching change for a team that technically, I emphasize the word technically, is still in the playoff race. I feel like if you're a team that's, you know, very much out of it at this time and you want to fire a coach, I think that makes more sense. I have a hard time seeing something happening in season. And I know that typically when coaches get fired in the NHL, the team, as Jared likes to say, gets a bit of a sugar high and plays well. That's something else that Jared and I talked about. I'm not convinced that even if they did make a coaching change, if that sugar high actually did work, it would still be enough for them to make the playoffs. Like, I'm not convinced that a coaching change would get this team back into the playoffs. So.
Are you convinced that a coaching change, is a good idea, is needed? I mean, how much do you put of this season on John Hines?
Well, this is always a difficult conversation to have, because I think there are so many factors at play. Because when David Poile said at the end of last season that he felt like he had not given John Hines a good enough roster to compete, I agreed with him, and I think you did too. I agreed with that. I thought that John, for the most part, had made the best out of a bad situation. This season, I feel less that way, for lack of a better phrase. I just think that if this team misses the playoffs for the first time in 8 or 9 years, they haven't missed the postseason since 2014. And for everybody listening out there, I'm going to nip this in the bud on the text line. The NHL does consider the qualifying round as a postseason appearance. So that is why I include it as a postseason appearance.
Nip it in the butt.
Nip this in the what?
Bud.
Okay.
I said bud.
I thought he said butt, too.
No, I said bud.
Oh, my God. We have
I don't have the, what's that, malpropisms? Is that the word when you, like, is that the term for when you?
That's a hell of a word.
When you, like.
Especially at 6:21 a.m.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't know. I just know Joe and I made eye contact because we thought
you said bud. I said bud.
Okay. Very good.
Anyway. If they miss the postseason for the first time since 2014, I can't imagine they can justify bringing John back. I really can't.
Yeah. Well, so but see, then I'm going to return to my, I'll just be a broken record. Well, then, so you can justify, though, David Poile keeps his job and fires a coach and hires another coach. I mean, that's, and honestly, I don't want to spend a ton today on Poile and Hines and their job statuses, because it really is just at this point, we don't know. Based on what we know from ownership, David Poile is going to be the GM as long as he wants to be the GM, right?
Yes.
But I'm just saying, like, that to me is, like, how could that be justified? That's harder to justify than just the idea of just John Hines losing his job.
Oh, yeah. I understand that. In a normal situation, I think the general manager would also be on the hot seat. But I think ownership, based off the comments they made last year when Bill Haslam was being announced as entering the ownership group, that they're going to let David Poile do this as long as he wants. And the question I have for you, and I was thinking about this last night, is how much do you think, if at all, how much do you think the way things have been going over the past few years has in any way impacted David Poile's legacy among the fan base?
Yeah, well, I mean,
because I don't think it's helping at all.
No, it's not. I mean, obviously, look, they're just, if you look at the GM job in pro sports, obviously there are some great GMs And some of them have a great tenure, and then it's a happy ending, and they just retire when they want to retire, and yay. But for the most part, like, pro sports is cyclical, and so you have a downturn, and then people lose their jobs, and you have new people come into those jobs. That's just how it works in pro sports, right? So, you know, I feel like the long-term Predators fan, whenever David Poile is done as GM here, however that happens, whenever that happens, I do think his legacy will be very good. Mm-hmm. I do. But, yeah, I think at least in the moment here, because of how things have gone, there are bad feelings about him from fans. I mean, I think fans are upset. And look, they have every right to feel that way. I mean, there's just been a lot more bad than good since the Cup run, and it's led to what they are right now. So, but as far as legacy, I actually think that when it's like, let's go back to the late great Floyd Reese. And I can't, you know, I wasn't here in town when his tenure ended, but obviously it was like this power struggle with Jeff Fisher and all this stuff. And, you know, things took a downturn and all that, right? But to me, he was still a beloved guy in town because people recognize he built the best teams that franchise had ever had. And also, he was a very likable person, right? And so I do think that when people step back, there'll be a lot of love for David Poile in this town. But it's just that right now, these fans pay a lot of money to go watch this team, and they're mad. I think it's clear right now, Preds fandom, just the anger level, anxiety level, angst level, a lot of alliteration there, is all-time high for what I've seen. I mean, I got Joel in the text line saying, we are witnessing a complete franchise collapse in 2022-23, and he has a long text about all the things that have gone wrong. So, To answer your question, I think ultimately it will be fine, but it might be ugly, you know, until something changes, something they get better, or David Poile isn't the GM anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if David truly understands how upset this fan base is at him specifically, but about the team in general. I'm not sure. I mean, I know that David has been doing this for a very long time. He knows how these things ebb and flow. But I just don't get the sense that they truly comprehend the team. You know, not the players, the coach, the entire organization. I don't know if they truly comprehend just how fed up a significant portion of their fan base is with how this thing is going. I just think there is a disconnect between how the organization feels things are going and how the fan base thinks things are going.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know that.
I don't know that either.
To some extent, I have a feeling. Yeah, so to some extent you have to. I think with ownership in particular, and look, like Herb Fritch and some of the stuff he said. I mean, look, he fed into the, like, it was good he talked, right? Mm-hmm. But he fed into the perception that this is not your typical pro sports setup, and that, like, this is like a lifetime appointment for David Poile. And so when you have this mediocrity that extends, and it's very frustrating to watch this team kind of, you know, just go in circles, then the upset level rises. We are going to return to the Preds soon. We're going to start getting into some possible solutions. But coming up next, we are going to talk about a team that's doing very well in town, the Belmont Bruins men's basketball. Casey Alexander will join us next on Robbie and Rex Show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex. Adam Vingan in for Robbie, and very excited to welcome in our next guest. You know, Belmont basketball this year, the Missouri Valley Conference. I thought a rebuilding year of sorts for Belmont, and you're going to the MVC, very tough league. And here they are, 19-9, 12-5 in the league, a game out of first. Huge game coming up this weekend at Drake. We're very happy to welcome in Casey Alexander. Casey, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you doing?
Doing well. So, I was totally wrong. I was like, yeah, it's just not great timing for Belmont, you know, with the fantastic veterans who, of course, you know, were done last season and, you know, moving to the MVC. And look at you guys now. Is there any level of surprise on your end that you guys have had the season you've had, Casey?
Oh, gosh. I would hesitate to call it a surprise. I had all the same concerns that you did. There's no doubt about that. I mean, we just lost so many important pieces, all of our leadership, all of our scoring, all of our experience. And then definitely with the, you know, you combine that with moving to a tougher conference. We had a lot of questions. There's, you know, we and a completely blank slate, not knowing how it would turn out. So, and it took us a while. We weren't a very good team early in the season either. But it's come together pretty nicely. Still got some work to do. Got a really tough finish here with these last three games.
So Ben Shepherd is a guy who, from the jump, I mean, you could see he could be a special player. I've thought, you know, this is a guy who is going to make money somewhere, a lot of money playing basketball someday. He's a tremendous talent, but it seems like everything has come together for him. I mean, 19-3 a game. He's giving you five, you know, he's leading your team in rebounding. You know, he's got 87 assists. He's shooting 42% from three. What has happened with Ben, and also not just being a great player, but is he the guy stepping into the leadership void? Like who has done that this year for the Bruins?
Yeah, well, Ben's carried the lion's share of all of those roles for sure. He is, you know, the consistency with which he's played, his versatility, and his ability to, you know, to accomplish those numbers, you know, really being our go-to guy from day one, and that being a completely new role for him. He had a great season last year. He's an all-conference player, you know, but he was playing with Nick Muzinski, who was an all-conference player for 4 years, Grayson Murphy, who was an all-conference player for 4 years. Both of those guys are record holders at Belmont, so he could fly under the radar a little bit. What he's done this year in his numbers across the board, I mean, his percentages, his efficiencies, the improvements he's made as a ball handler and playmaker and finisher, and all the while being, yeah, as you mentioned, our senior leader, kind of the one guy that we knew we could count on and we were going to have this season. He's delivered in every way from beginning to end.
So now that you've been in, I'm trying to think, at this point, have you've played everyone now? Is that right? You've played everybody at least once?
We have not played. We play everybody twice throughout the season, except for two teams. We only played at SIU. They do not come to Belmont, Southern Illinois. And then we did not play at Indiana State. They come to Belmont, and we have not played Indiana State yet. That will be our next and last home game next Wednesday.
Right. So that's senior day, Wednesday, 6:30 at the Curb Center. So okay. So that's the last team that you haven't seen, but you know, for the most part, and that's a very good team too. I mean, you've got a logjam here, Southern Illinois in there, but of course, you know, Drake, who came in here and beat you earlier, you're going to their place. Bradley, fantastic win there. So basically you've seen almost all the league. Is it about what you expected? Like, what are your impressions from this first year going through a tremendous basketball conference?
Yeah, it has been probably everything that I expected and maybe a little more. You know, the just the difficulty from 1 to whatever there is, 12, is significantly different than what we're used to. You know, if we don't show up and play well in this league, we're just not going to win the game. And so having to prepare that way and play that way over the course of a 20-game conference season, which is a lot of conference games, has been a change. But it's been really exciting. You know, this is a much more defensive-minded league. Tempo is slower than what we were used to playing in. It's incredibly physical and allowed to be that way. We've got the best of the best referees in this league, but that also means they're Power Five guys, and they let you play. So that was a big learning curve for us. But it's been fun. I mean, I think it's a great move for Belmont. We've got to get better as a program. We've got to get better in a lot of ways in order to sustain any level of success. But it's really a fun league. It's a basketball-centric league. People love their teams in this league. Really good home venues, really good crowds. So it's been quite a change.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of awesome environments in this league, no doubt. And, you know, the tournament coming up, I mean, that's a CBS national championship game. I mean, this is obviously there's a lot of great things about being in this league. So have you Have you mentioned in that physicality, Casey, have you had to adjust at all just the way you guys play?
We haven't changed as far as X's and O's or strategy, but we've had to get a lot better on both ends of the floor. I mean, it just offense has not come as easily. You know, I mean, you're not as it's not as easy to get in and out of screens. It's not as easy to finish around the rim just because of the size difference, physicality difference, and then things just being able to go. And that's kind of always been our end of the floor. In the games that we've lost, we've had a miserable time offensively. In the games that we've won, we've looked a little bit more like our true Belmont selves historically. So, so we've made changes as we go for sure.
And we always talk about college basketball. I know for anyone coaching in college sports right now, massive changes have happened. The portal has taken away from your program, but this year you've got Keyshawn Davidson, of course, from Tennessee Tech, but also Drew Freiberg. I know for you to have like sort of that four guy who can pick and pop is always a big thing. How big have those two guys been, and just where are you right now on everything? With college, is it any better? Is it just as chaotic as it was when all this stuff started?
It's definitely as chaotic as it was, and I don't think it's getting any better, and I don't think it will get any better for a while. We might get more used to it, but I don't think it's going to get any better. I'm not a fan of the changes, but I also live in reality and know that we've got to understand that the portal is here to stay, and NIL is here to stay, and we've got to make the adaptations that are necessary in order to be relevant. But you just make the most of it. We lost two guys at the end of our season last year to the portal. That's a very unfamiliar territory for Belmont. Our retention has been as good as anybody's in the country over the last 10, 15, 20 years. And so to replace, two out of our best three players that were supposed to come back from the portal was a challenge. And we got a little bit different players, but you mentioned Drew Freiberg. I mean, we knew that Shepherd was going to be able to give us some scoring, but we had to have a complementary piece and somebody that could stretch the defense. And Drew Freiberg is from Princeton has definitely been that guy from the very beginning. He is, he's been near 50% from the 3-point line all season long. Very smart player, very high basketball IQ. So he has fit our team extremely well and been a really important piece for us. Keyshawn Davidson has had his moments, but he had a really significant injury 3 days before our season started. So he missed our first 6 or 7 games. It took him another 6 or 7 or 10 just to get back in the flow of things. So we haven't gotten the season that we all expected from him. He's still dealing with an injury, shoulder injury, but he's still been a really important piece to our team and where we are today.
And then Cade Tyson has been fantastic as a freshman. And obviously you needed that, right? You needed some newcomers to come in here, and he looks like he's maybe the next Belmont long-term really good player. What's his freshman season been like? And I guess on top of that, Casey, is your recruiting area now different or expanded or enhanced because of being in the MVC?
Recruiting, has changed a while back. It's so summer league, summer team driven. Everybody wants to say it's AAU. It's not really AAU, but we can call it that just to keep it simple. But, so you go to tournaments and you see teams from everywhere, and we've recruited, with a pretty far reach always. So this will make it easier to do that, but I wouldn't say it'll change things. I mean, I think our roster this year, I think we've got maybe 10 different states represented. I mean, we've got Iowa, we've got Illinois, we've got Pennsylvania, we've got Arkansas, we've got North Carolina, we've got them coming from a lot of different places. And Cade Tyson, the one you mentioned, I mean, he is having a phenomenal year. He makes a shot at the buzzer in our very first game, and he has double figures in that game, and he's never looked back. We knew he was a good player. We knew he would make a contribution, but you got to be a little hesitant with all freshmen, 5 stars, 4 stars. It doesn't matter how good they come in. It just doesn't always work the way that you think it's going to. They all advance at different rates. But Cade has been tremendously steady, really, really consistent throughout the season. And he's earned it. I mean, the guy works really hard. A lot of people don't know, but his brother is Hunter Tyson, who plays for Clemson, who's you know, probably in the running for ACC Player of the Year. And they're both really tough kids, smart kids. We're lucky we've got Cade. And you're right. I think he's going to be the next great player for us, you know, if he keeps developing.
Casey Alexander, Belmont coach. It's Sunday at Drake. Huge game. That's at 3 o'clock. It's on the CBS Sports Network. And then Indiana State Wednesday at home for Senior Day at the Curb Center. Casey, hey, I really appreciate the time. Good luck to you guys this weekend the rest of the way.
Hey, thanks, Joe. I enjoyed it.
Casey Alexander, Belmont men's basketball. And when we come back, it'll be the best and worst in sports. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And it is time for the best and worst in sports. First, let me tell you real fast that moving's no fun, can be expensive. You can save in your next move with our Nashville's best deal of the week from Black Tie Moving. Get $200 off a half-day move for just $75 or $400 off a full-day move for $150 at thegamenashville.com/deals. Best and worst in sports. You know, I always go first. Robbie always lets me go first.
Let our guests go first.
Yeah, I think we should let our guests go first. Adam Vingan. Your best and worst in sports this week.
Well, I'm actually going to combine mine because I'm not sure exactly how I feel about this.
I've done that before. I get it.
It was announced last night, I believe, that Travis Kelce will be hosting Saturday Night Live next month. And why I say it's best and worst is I would say a fairly, I was going to say checkered, but I'm not sure that's right. The history of athletes hosting Saturday Night Live, it's a mixed bag. That's what I'm looking for. Like, my gut tells me that Travis Kelce might be pretty good at this, but I don't know. I really can't determine if this is the best or the worst until after he actually hosts Saturday Night Live.
That's fair.
But I was thinking about the history of athletes who have hosted Saturday
Night
Live.
There's some really good ones.
To me, the GOAT of athlete hosting Saturday Night Live is Peyton Manning.
Yep.
The United Way skit he did several years ago is one of the funniest things I've ever seen, where he's playing football with the kids. Yes. And he's like pegging them with the ball and telling them to go stand in the porta potty because he's unhappy with them.
Right. Oh, I know. That was fantastic. He was great.
He's had some pop-up appearances. I think he did one a couple of years ago where he was talking about Emily in Paris on Weekend Update. Very, very funny.
That was like last year. Yes.
But like, here are some Hall of Fame worthy athletes who have hosted Saturday Night Live, because I think we would agree that at the rate he's going, Travis Kelce will probably be in the Hall of Fame, right? Yep. One of the greatest tight ends to play the game.
Oh yeah.
Jeff Gordon, Andy Roddick, Tom Brady, Lance Armstrong, Peyton Manning, LeBron, Michael Phelps, Charles Barkley.
See, it's funny because I don't remember a lot of those. Jordan was very good.
Jordan
was very good. He did like, you know, Stuart Smalley, you know, I'm good enough. I mean, that's going back. That's like, to me, the golden era.
Wayne Gretzky hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I remember his was, it was kind of like.
Deion Sanders.
Barkley was good too. But it's interesting. I don't remember a lot of those. That's a pretty good either or. I think Kelce, I think he's got a chance to be pretty decent.
I think people are just annoyed with him though right now. So the timing of it, because he's really
not in Kansas City.
Really though, honing in on the nobody picked us. Yeah. I think he's trolling though.
That might be my worst in sports actually, is the Travis Kelce, nobody believed in us. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that we picked you to go 12-5 instead of 14-3.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Anyway, touch base with me in a couple of weeks after he hosts, because it could go one of two ways. But okay. I'm leaning towards best. I think he has the sense of humor to make it work. So that's what I'll go with.
Sounds good. Michelle?
Okay, my best in sports this week, and you know, it's so fitting that it's a little two-parter right here, because you know, I always like to look at everything glass half full. So we'll do a little two-parter here and then a small worst. So my best in sports this week is kind of college basketball just as a whole. I have had three moments this week where, no, I was not sitting down watching college basketball, but I happened to check my ESPN app or something, and I got to see the buzzer beater for the Missouri game the Missouri-Tennessee, Vanderbilt-Tennessee. Like, I didn't see any of the game. I just happened to turn my phone on, and I saw the last play, the buzzer beaters. And then last night, I was sitting at an establishment, and I turned my head, and I see Notre Dame women's basketball win on a buzzer beater against Louisville, which just gets me so incredibly excited for college basketball. You know, the buzzer beaters, March,
and
everything.
And Louisville losing, yeah.
Yeah, and Tennessee. It was just great. It was awesome. And I also have to give a quick little shout out. Kevin Herter, known him his whole life. He just got picked to be in the 3-point contest with the NBA All-Star Game. He was with Atlanta. Now he's in Sacramento. Just a great guy all around. So happy he gets the opportunity out there. My worst in sports is sports fans on Twitter seeing something and like not reading. Like, we as a generation, as you know, adults need to learn to listen and read again and not take things to the extreme, because I'm getting crucified on Louisville Twitter right now. But just read the tweet. I never said it should happen. I never said it's going to happen. I said I could see that happening. So let's just read it.
And to clarify for people who don't know, you said you could see Chris Beard being Louisville's coach next
year.
Yes,
because listen, I do not agree with any of, like, that is awful. But the unfortunate truth and the unfortunate reality is people in their past, he will get a job. That's the unfortunate, the charges have been dropped. The unfortunate truth is he will get a job. Do I think he should? No. But he will be a college basketball coach again. So.
Yes.
Louisville Twitter. Back off. And we will take Kenny Payne back in Kentucky as an assistant. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. That'd be something. All right. Well, my best actually is also college hoops related. Basically, just college hoops. I mean, it was awesome to talk to Casey Alexander there. I mean, it's great what they're doing. You know, Middle Tennessee last night beats ranked Florida Atlantic, which is a massive win for Middle Tennessee men's basketball. Middle Tennessee women's basketball, 14-2 in the league. Controlling that league, 21-4 overall, a top 25 caliber team that could do a little damage there in the tournament. But like just in the past week, Vanderbilt under Jerry Stackhouse rolling right now. Huge game. I'm going to be actually tomorrow, do a little double duty. Preds afternoon, you know, maybe get some food on the way over to West End and do little Vanderbilt Auburn. I think Vanderbilt Auburn crowd tomorrow night has a chance to actually be kind of Memorial Magic-ish. Tennessee beats number one Alabama. Huge bounce back win, missing two key players. Big game tomorrow, Kentucky. So it's college basketball in general.
Stressed.
Is an easy best. Yes, that's a biggie. Worst is, I'm going to go back to it. I've seen so much excuse making and just spin on this. It was a crap call that decided the Super Bowl too early. It was a crap call. It was garbage. And I keep getting people sending me like these little still shots. Speaking of Twitter annoyances, I don't want to see your still shot of, oh, look, his arms on the jersey. His hands, I got the jersey. Yeah, that's a BS call. It was a BS call. It shouldn't have ended the Super Bowl, and that's that. And that's my worst in sports. Quickly, to get to the text line here, I had, let's see, worst in sports, according to Chris, the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com, Jared's shock jock approach to his argument, having a problem with the Chiefs saying no one picked them, saying everybody picked the Chiefs. When a quick Google search for preseason predictions, mostly all picked the Chargers when they FC West. So, yes, the Chiefs weren't picked by most. I mean, I will say, look, I think almost all of NFL media, including I know I did this, I picked the Bills to win it all. So, from that perspective, it's kind of the same as Georgia. Everybody's picking Alabama this year. Everybody thought Bama was going to win it, not Georgia. But then they go to the, you picked us 6-6. Okay, let's.
And then
let's,
they go to, pump they the picked us not to make the playoffs. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's right. So it gets hyperbolized. But you know, I mean, there was some truth to the idea. I had questions about the Chiefs without Tyreek Hill, for sure. And they answered emphatically. William from Madison, best thing in sports, college baseball starts today. Number 2, Tennessee. Number 10, Vanderbilt. So that is awesome. Thank you for submitting that, William. And when we come back, speak of the devil, we will have Jared Stillman here to talk with Adam Vingan and me on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.